You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 22nd of December 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today I thought we would take a closer look at the decision that was made in the Harry Miller case that I referred to yesterday, or the day before, I believe it was. And if we have time, we will have a look at some of the effects this guidance on watching out for hostility regarding any minorities has actually had on freedom of speech. And I've got this article here from The Spectator, and it says, "Court decisions don't often call for three cheers. But today's Court of Appeal determination in the Harry Miller case is an exception. Essentially, the judges have told the police to rewrite the rules on recording what they see as hate incidents." Now, this isn't hate crimes. This isn't the Public Order Act. This is when people report others online for saying things that they disagree with, basically opinions that they don't like, and they claim that it was motivated by hostility, and therefore the police have to record this, and it goes on a person's record, and it can turn up in enhanced background checks for jobs and things like that. However technical this looks, this is actually an enormous blow in favour of the freedom of ordinary people to say what they want. It is also an admirable Christmas present for anyone seriously concerned with protecting free speech, not to mention a high-profile triumph for the Free Speech Union, who stood squarely behind the appeal, and that's Toby Young's organisation. Fighting cases like this needs moral and financial support, and in tandem with Fair Cop, the FSU has very commendably provided both. And of course, a problem with actually getting financial support for things like this is that the financial platforms end up banning the person that is trying to get the support, and people end up being debanked. I mean, even Donald Trump had his banking facilities taken away from him this year or last year, whatever it was, with the American election. Even the President of the United States has had his bank account taken away, let alone people like Mark Collette and Laura Towler and Henrik Palmgren. They've all had their bank accounts taken away. And I'm surprised that the Free Speech Union has managed to actually collect donations towards this, in actual fact. In case you've forgotten the background, a guidance document issued to all police forces says the following. If someone says something which anyone else sees as embodying hostility based on race, religion, transgenderism, or a number of other characteristics, then even if no crime whatsoever is indicated, police must record it as a so-called non-crime hate incident, or NCHI. It matters little if the incident is trivial, or its classification fairly obviously misguided, or even if the complainant is a victim, it must still go down. There is little discretion, nor is it necessarily just a matter between the speaker and the police. NCHIs can feature in the Enhanced Criminal Record Certificate that anyone must produce to work with children or the vulnerable. Harry Miller, a retired policeman with a habit of posting gender-critical but entirely lawful views online, fell foul of this system in 2019. One tweet he posted questioned whether transgender women were real women. mean, that it's just a sort of question that people will ask, and they will point out that biologically they still have XY chromosomes. And clearly the person that complained about this and said that that meant that this Harry Miller was being hostile towards them was a transgender. So we can see there that we have a two-tier society. We have now have these groups in society with protected characteristics that can essentially prevent people from ever criticizing them or ever saying anything that they don't like. Anyone who has a different opinion to them runs the risk of being reported by them for debating them or for pointing out the alternative point of view. And this is going to prevent that. Police subsequently turned up at Miller's workplace after receiving a complaint, and an NCHI was recorded against his name, seemingly on the basis that the guidance required it. Armed with a healthy dose of bloody-mindedness, Miller objected to being labelled as a suspected hatemonger on evidence at best slender and at worst non-existent, and it was at his insistence that the Court of Appeal this morning said this was indeed unacceptable in law. Even if a person was not prosecuted for what they said, the prospect of having even lawful speech recorded as a matter of course merely because someone somewhere saw it as hateful had a gravely chilling effect on their exercise of robust free speech. It followed that it was contrary to the protection of free speech in Article 10 of the European Convention on Human Rights and unlawful. This is pretty unalloyed good news. The protection of free speech under the Strasbourg Convention is normally pretty patchy because of the qualifications hedging it around, but here it has unusually come up trumps. Automatic recording of non-crime hate incidents, first introduced in an excess of zeal following some incautious recommendations emanating from the Stephen Lawrence inquiry, is a dead duck. To record what someone has said, the police will now need at least some rational connection with crime fighting or keeping order, rather than the mere say-so of a possibly misguided complainant. As a byproduct, pressure groups and the easily offended will find it more difficult to silence those they do not like by reporting them to the police. Instead of having to show excessive respect to a complainant just because they are a complainant, or in police speak, a victim, the latter will now have a great deal more reason to do what they should have done all along and tell complainants, tactfully but firmly, that they cannot become embroiled in the policing of a political or social argument. And this is great, because there have been so many of these court cases over tweets and what have you, and it's just been malicious on the part of one of these members of these groups, or even journalists just being malicious and trying to silence people with another point of view. We have to have robust debate to have a functioning democracy. And if you say, well, one side cannot actually say their opinions because it's criticism of these protected groups, it's essentially saying, well, these groups are above the law, they're above criticism, nobody can say anything that they disagree with, especially if you say that anybody that does feel as if they don't like what somebody else has said, they're automatically a victim. I mean, when has it ever been heard of that you're a victim if somebody else has a different opinion to you? It doesn't make you a victim of a crime, and yet that's the terminology that's been used here. These complainants, the people that put the complaints in, they're registered by the police as a victim. An attraction of the Court of Appeal's decision today is that it protects the free speech of the ordinary tweeter or social media user, rather than only that of high-profile campaigners or journalists. But it may also go further. The idea rejected by the Court of Appeal as contrary to free speech, that hate speech is fundamentally a matter of victimhood, and hence that all that matters is how it is perceived by those affected, was not limited to the College of Policing. Many public authorities, not wishing to be left out, have embraced the idea wholeheartedly in their own codes of conduct and equality and diversity policies. they may now have to show some care in how they seek to moderate the speech of those who work for them if they are not to fall foul of the courts. And this is the most interesting part of this, as we'll see in these other news stories that I've got for today. This is what's been going on in schools mainly, where they've been policing people's speech. There is one other person who, as a result of all this, will, one suspects, be quietly happy: Priti Patel. The judges have incidentally got her out of an awkward bind. Instinctively pro-free speech, aware of the problems of non-hate crime incidents, and heavily pressured by free speech advocates to do something about them, she has nevertheless had to do a careful balancing act. The police establishment, rightly or wrongly, support NCHIs, and wise Home Secretaries do not want to alienate the police or to take steps which could be seen as cramping their style in suppressing crime. But now that the difficult and correct decision has been taken for her, she could even be forgiven for discreetly cracking open a socially distanced Christmas bottle with her officials somewhere in the Home Office out of the sight of malicious journalists. And I guess the police look at them as, people that are likely to carry out non-crime hate incidents are possibly more likely to then go on to carry out hate crimes. I mean, that may be their logic there, sort of logic why they support drugs being illegal, because sometimes people that are caught with drugs then go on to carry out further crimes, so it can help them in that way. But that has to be balanced against the effect that it has on free speech, and this has had a terrible effect on free speech. It's essentially silenced half of the population. And as I say, it affects schools mainly. The first article I have here: a headmistress has ditched the titles of head boy and head girl at her Church of England school after claiming the terms were outdated. And of course, the reason why she's done that is because she thinks that it shows hostility to transgenders to refer to boys and girls. Yet transgenders are going to claim to either be one gender or the other most of the time. But that's the reason why she's done this. Rachel Lucas, 47, said pupils elected to the roles at Bolton St Catherine's Academy in Greater Manchester would now be known as gender-neutral head ambassadors. She said the new titles would provide a welcoming atmosphere for all, and the move was part of the school's desire to continue to be known as an inclusive community. Well, that kind of excludes boys and girls, doesn't it? It excludes males and females. It's not really welcoming to remove the word boy and remove the word girl. The three chosen pupils were Ted Hodson Fitton, Jemima Alasudra, and Sophia Hughes. So they've gone for a boy, a girl, and a black girl, basically. A white boy, a white girl, and a black girl. So they've got all the diversity boxes ticked there. The school has maintained the head boy and girl titles in its junior school. I dare say the juniors would be rather confused at this, being told that they're no longer boys or girls. Mrs. Lucas said, "At Bolton St. Catherine's Academy, we recognise and celebrate diversity and inclusion. We are delighted to be able to showcase our commitment to this by thinking about how we address our lead student ambassadors, moving away from the outdated notion of a head girl and boy." So it's outdated now to be male and female, the way that people are born, the way that all the rest of the natural world is. We think we're too modern for that now. We're above all that sort of thing. We can just be gender neutral. She says small gestures can have big impacts. And with many other initiatives around school, we are signalling our resolution to be an institution that is welcoming to all. Yeah, to everyone apart from traditionalists and people who believe in the natural world. A post on the school's website added, "Taking the place of the traditional head boy and girl titles, we will now use the term head ambassadors. And the three selected students to take on this exciting role are Sophia, Ted, and Jemima." And I dare say that they haven't yet developed enough critical faculties to actually work out why this is wrong mean, this is why they go after children, because they're not very critical. They haven't learnt to be critical, and they just absorb whatever they are told. And this is why we have so many thoughtless things going on in society, because these children have never been taught to actually question these things that they've been told. The school, which was formed in 2009 following the merger of two other schools, currently has an LGBTQ plus group for students. And we learned the other week that there are teachers that are looking through the browser history of students, looking to actually recruit students to these LGBTQ plus groups, and they hide the membership so that they can hide that from the parents. So they're encouraging children to identify themselves as homosexual and encouraging them to be homosexual, and then they're hiding that from the parents. But the reason for this changing this name from boys, changing the word boys and girls, is out of a desire not to offend transgenders. And of course, and not to get charged with, or not to get recorded as engaging in a non-crime hate incident. The next one we have here: a school in Leicestershire, England, has banned the terms good and bad to describe pupil behaviour, because the head teacher wanted to remove emotional words from classroom management. And again, I dare say that if you're a minority or a group with protected characteristics, and somebody says you've been bad, then again they can claim that that person's being hostile to them. Teachers at Loughborough Amherst School will instead describe good and bad behaviour as either skillful or unskillful, with headmaster Dr. Julian Murphy saying the policy, loaned from Buddhism, was designed to take the emotional heat out of language. And it also takes the morality out of it, doesn't it? If you're not saying things are good or evil anymore, or good or bad, they're effectively saying that these things don't exist. There's no more good or bad. It's all the same thing. This is moral relativism. This is Gnostic ideas. That's where that one comes from. Speaking to the newspaper, Dr. Murphy said that while he did not want teachers to be soft, he did not want them to be shouty either, or to make pupils feel guilty. Well, if they've done wrong, they should be encouraged to feel guilty. He says, I think it's human psychology, even when you're an adult. If people make you feel guilty, then you get angry, and then actually that's when you're likely to play the blame game and not to work that well. That's when things get into a bit of a vicious circle, he continued. The head teacher maintained, however, that he still ran quite a strict school, claiming that there was a cumulative behaviour policy that could result in expulsion for handing in homework late too many times or frequent littering. How are these pupils going to learn to have self-discipline if they're not encouraged to feel guilty when they've done wrong? I mean, they should have learned to have self-discipline then. By that time, they should have been disciplined by their parents. But of course, nowadays we have laws in some countries preventing parents from even smacking their children when they're young, which is when they need to be disciplined. So a child learns to have self-discipline, because you certainly can't be smacking them once they become adults. And they need to know that if somebody raises their voice at them, it's because they've done wrong. The whole point of it is to encourage the development of the conscience, so that a child doesn't do wrong. And yet what they're doing here is that they're not going to use the words good or bad, because they don't want children to feel guilty. And when they do wrong, the teachers are not even going to raise their voices at them. And who knows what the students from this school are going to end up like with that sort of an education. And this teacher has actually been in the news before in 2018 for banning traditional school reports and instead replacing them with a biannual report modelled on employee reviews in the workplace. Not to be outdone in ridiculous policies at school, one of the world's most exclusive and expensive prep schools, the Dragon School at Oxford, has announced that it will be renaming the Christmas and Easter terms in order to become more inclusive. And that's the word here, isn't it? It's inclusive. I had this desire not to offend anyone. We won't have boys and girls, male and female. And now we won't talk about Christmas or Easter. Who is it they are concerned about offending by talking about Christmas and Easter? Britain is supposed to be a Christian country. I mean, what we're doing here is we are ignoring all our traditions. We're trampling on our traditions and our ancestors and everything that actually made the country great in the first place. The Dragon School, which charges £10,000 per term for 8 to 13-year-old boarding students and has hosted famed pupils, including Harry Potter actress Emma Watson, will now classify the Christmas and Easter terms as the autumn and spring terms, respectively, with the summer term keeping its current name. And I guess people will say, well, what they're worried about there is they're worried about offending Muslims, but Muslims, I think, they don't have a problem with Christmas. We do know that Jews don't particularly like Christmas because of the implications from that. We do know that Jews were responsible, or Jewish groups, I should say, were largely represented in the movements to remove mention of Christmas from schools in America and to remove prayers from schools in America. And interestingly, a lot of the authors of the recent Christmas songs that we have, like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and various other Christmas songs that have come about over the last 60 years, a lot of them have actually been written by Jews. And that's possibly the reason why you don't actually find mention of Jesus Christ in them. And of course, we also have this recent movie that's just come out, this Santa movie by Sarah Silverman, which really does trample over a lot of Christmas traditions in a very offensive way. So I would suggest that it's not Muslims that they're not trying to offend here in particular. It does tend to be Jews that advocate for the removal of Christmas. But what this school is trying to do is trying not to upset any groups with protected characteristics, because they don't want it to appear as a non-crime related hate incident. So this guidance that was given to the police, this has managed to work its way right the way through society. But will we actually see the rest of society changing now that the police guidance changes? The recently installed head of the school, Emma Goldsmith, said the decision to remove references to the Christian holidays was motivated by a desire to promote inclusivity. But Christmas is all about inclusivity, isn't it? It's about peace and goodwill to all men. The whole idea of Christmas is about being inclusive. And in their desire to be inclusive, that they're just removing this tradition and not naming the school by it. And further than that, they're removing all references to Christian holidays from the school, despite the fact that we have a Christian tradition here, and it was the church that was the first organization to actually begin to educate children. Goldsmith, who became the first female head of the school in March, said, per the local Oxford Mail, "We are a large, vibrant and busy school that is bursting with energy and are keen to remain forward-thinking and adapt to the growing needs of our busy parents." I do wonder whether she is actually Jewish, with a name such as Goldsmith. While Goldsmith claimed that the decision was welcomed by families, one disgruntled parent told us, "What is uninclusive about Christmas and Easter? Who has complained about the names of these terms?" And you do wonder, and I don't think anybody complains about these things. They just take it upon themselves to change them. You get a zealous left-wing progressive teacher at the school, and they're the ones that make these moves to change things. Nobody actually complains about them. They read the newspapers, they read the ideas that the journalists are pushing and claiming that that is public opinion that's driving it, and they go along with it. They go along with it, and also because that's what they've been indoctrinated with at university. And don't forget, of course, that all the opposing views have now been removed from the university under the guise of preventing people from being triggered by upsetting language. The disgruntled parent says it has a Church of England ethos and the vast majority of pupils are Christian. What is the need to be inclusive at every touch point? This is wokery run riot for no reason at all. And this is going on in Church of England schools. Don't forget, we also have a three-part series on the Radio Albion homepage about a vicar who was a teacher in a Church of England school, and he got reported for terrorism for giving a sermon during assembly where he told the pupils to be tolerant of other people's opinions and said to them that they didn't have to become Muslim and they didn't have to become homosexual. All they had to do was to tolerate other people who had different ideas to themselves. And he was reported to prevent the anti-terror organisation for doing this. And I believe he lost his job at the school. I mean, the Church of England are some of the worst people for doing this, and yet they are supposed to be a Christian organisation. The spread of wokery throughout British education, particularly after the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement on both sides of the Atlantic, has seen ideological attacks on a range of seemingly innocuous targets, including Charles Darwin's theory of evolution, Isaac Newton, sheet music, medieval English literature, the Queen, and even lectures on tropical viruses for supposedly spreading racism and colonialism. Will we see a winding back on all of this now that we have had this this judgment handed down? I don't think we will, but I do think we will see less people being reported to the police for coming out with a different opinion now. And it does mean that people can cite this decision when they see this sort of thing going on in the schools, and they see it going on throughout society. So this is very good news that he won this case. Let's hope we have more wins in the future for free speech. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.